Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again with another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, this will be a fun episode to do. We're looking forward to kind of reviewing what took place during the first early signing period, give people an idea as to where kind of the pieces that we mentioned, where they are in their own individual process of recording this Friday morning. We had a little bit of business that we were working on together and also wanted to wait a second for some news that might be coming down the pipe. And damn if Florida State didn't get a pretty nice shot in the arm this morning with the addition of a prospect that had long been committed but thought that maybe his recruitment might get a little more complicated recently. So a lot to talk about, a lot to jump into. Want to always thank Louisiana Hot Sauce for their support and sponsorship of podcasts like these. Just a fantastic product, three simple ingredients, and one bottle that can be used damn near every meal. And there's no better way to spice up just an everyday meal, whether it be at the office or at home or anything else. So we're fortunate to be able to partner with a product like that and a company like that. And Bud, let's jump right into what should be a pretty enjoyable Nolcast to record.
Yeah, I think we timed this thing up well, man. Waiting a little bit, did a little business this morning, and not a bad thing, man. We're going to come out hot, come out swinging, because Asante Samuel Jr. tweeted yesterday about loyalty. Wonder if that's a shot at Jimbo Fisher today. What's he do? Signs at Florida State. I mean, you want to just lead off with that, I guess? Because that's kind of the news of the day, so the far,
big,
at least.
Big news, absolutely. We were sitting here talking with each other about a couple pieces of information, both Nolcast related and then things that we had heard on the recruiting trail, and this popped, and I'll just put it this way. My reaction was one that I'm glad we weren't recording. It's a big deal. It's a real big deal for the class. Obviously, a lot of people will talk about Miami's involvement and the vast majority of their fan base that seemed to think this kid was ultimately destined for Coral Gables, but we're not sure that Florida might not have been on the verge of getting involved in this as well. And that's whenever you start to see the circle expanding and maybe the situation getting a little more complicated, never a good thing. This is a quality prospect, another nice little shot in the arm for a class, and it's a big damn deal. So a great ad for Tribe 18.
It is, man, it is. And I got to tell you, Miami thought they were going to flip him. And I was golfing yesterday, and I got a call that said, hey, did you hear about this Florida stuff? I said, what? And he said, look, Florida thinks he's going to wait to sign and that U.S. can be able to get him on an official visit. So if he opened things back up, I think the chance you get him back is not real high, man.
Exactly. Once you start to see that circle grow, that's not a good sign on a kid that you've had committed.
No. So that's it's almost like Willie Taggart was in South Florida yesterday, you know, and people down there knew that. And Asante Samuel ends up signing. Of course, you know, it's a non-contact period, so he can't go see him. But I'm not trying to imply that or anything. Samuel goes ahead and signs. NFL legacy. A little bit about the player. He's an undersized corner. And, you know, I know Florida State typically prefers bigger corners. But at the same time, you know, you have to get what you can get. If you're going to take an undersized kid, and I think we discussed this on the episode in which he committed. But if you're going to take an undersized kid, he better be fast. He better be really quick. He better have good technique. Asante Samuel has better press technique already than a lot of kids on this roster. He's been taught well.
A lot.
That's something that's going to get better, by the way. I think FSU will play better press coverage. I don't mean more aggressive press coverage. I mean like more technically sound press coverage going forward. Samuel can already do that, right? He's in your hip pocket. He's a total playmaker. You know, not a freakish athlete, but he's very quick. Top end speed is good. I don't know if he's like a legit, you know, 4.3 type guy. But he's a guy that you really want on your defense. And people are like, well, I don't know how he projects to the NFL at that size. Man, last I checked, Florida State's in the ACC, not the AFC, right? You do want guys who are going to go to the NFL. I think he probably will eventually. But at the same time, you know, some of these like size concerns that you have are more, to me, NFL-related than they are college-related. You got to be able to get ballers, and he's definitely one of them.
It's a big deal, man. I know a lot of people kind of lost their bearings in the first 6 to 8 hours of signing day with how that played out for Florida State. So why don't we go ahead and just have a review of what took place on Wednesday. I have to say that if you listen to the Nolcast that we recorded late on Tuesday night, I think you had a pretty good outline as to what to look for and maybe what would take place. But let's just give a quick little recap of what we've seen so far and where some of the individual pieces decided ultimately to go to school.
I mean, yeah, just running this back down. I got to tell you, our listeners, I felt like were pretty pretty informed. We said, hey, they're going to get Cooper, Armstrong, and Gaynor to sign. They are trying to get, Rescindo Lewis. I think I actually mispronounced his name in the previous episode, thinking about that former Auburn receiver, Ricardo. But Rescindo Lewis, they wanted him to not sign, you know, because they knew he was in early enrollee anyway, so he could just not sign and enroll, and maybe they have another shot to talk to him and get him in. It doesn't happen. He flipped to South Carolina. You know, Anthony Litton, we said that they want him to sign. Not sure he will early, but obviously he's still very, very strongly committed. And we said, look, they're worried for real at the Moore Center about Samuel flipping to Miami. Now, what happened? Lewis did go to South Carolina. He did not wait like they wanted. Litton, so far, has not faxed in his letter of intent. We'll see. In fact, I think that could happen today.
Could be incoming. Absolutely.
Yeah. Sante Samuel Jr., obviously, we just talked about. Kids who are not signing today who are still committed, you know, Christian Meadows, DeMarcus Adams, Chaz Neal, all three of those kids, no drama there. We told you that we didn't think Florida State would take Michael Penix early because he's not really an FSU starting caliber player. I'm not trying to give ourselves a huge pat on the back on this, but man, there were other shows and other folks who were like just all in on the kid once Florida State offered. I'm like, man, an FSU offer doesn't change who he is as a player. Mm-hmm. And then they had to backtrack like crazy. I think we were pretty consistent in that, saying, look, I've seen the kid. He's good. He's just not special. He's not a kid we would take early, right? We told you that James Cook's mom did not come on the visit, the official visit, and that thus we didn't think he'd sign with Florida State. You know, we said, hey, don't be surprised if there's some craziness where he decides to, you know, wait a week or two. Didn't happen. Georgia locked it down. Georgia got him. But he, you know, we said he's not going to Florida State. He didn't. Emory Jones, I actually went back and listened to our audio. I'm really proud of what we said there. We said, look, Den Mullen's been recruiting this guy for 3 years. He was the first one to offer him when he was at Mississippi State. Willie Taggart's been on Emory Jones for like a week. I think it's a real credit to Taggart that he actually got that kid to waver, right, and to have some serious doubt. There's two kids on Florida State's roster Jones is not going to beat out as a true freshman, and that's Dondre Francois and James Blackman. At Florida, all he's got to do is beat out Felipe Franks, who's a statue, and Florida runs the heck out of their quarterback, and Emory Jones is a good runner. It just made sense for him to go to Florida. If I was Emory Jones, I would have picked Florida. I want to start day one at a program like that. Absolutely. In that offense, yes. So he did. Brendan Radley-Hiles is going to sign at the Army game, I believe, still. So no change in the plans there, like we let you know about. Isaiah Bolden still expected to sign on Friday. I think that'll be Florida State. No change there to our preview show. This is why we didn't drop a show yesterday, by the way. I felt like our preview show was still so strong. Oh, and then Jaden Woodbay, the one kid we went out on a limb and said, look, we like FSU's chances to get him there. They got him. And that's remarkable, by the way, that they were able to pull him. But that's our kind of review of the preview. I don't think anything else really, man, got we kind of just crushed it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good product. Happy that it played out the way it did. All right, bud, this is probably a pretty good little stopping point for us to be able to talk about our sponsors in general, and we're always excited to talk about what the Before the Table Restaurant Group is doing. We admire them not only for the product that they put on your table if you go and eat there, but just the way that they've connected with the fan base and kind of have interwoven themselves in the experience and the experience that a Florida State Athletics supporter has. But they've got something that I think is a game changer here. First of all, I want to point to your attention the For the Table app, something that they've recently developed and have out there. But for the Tallahassee listeners, and we know that we have very well represented in the Tallahassee market, I'll put it that way, for the Tallahassee listeners, and for those of you that frequently make your way to Tallahassee, within a short period of time, I think the actual start date to this is January 8th, but you will be able to have Madso, Centrale, and Township deliver, and part of that delivery, bud, could maybe even include alcohol.
Wow.
Booze delivery. Not messing around. Not messing around. Fully committed.
That's awesome, man.
Is that For the Table Restaurant Group?
They are fully committed, man. That is awesome. Wow. Dude, can you imagine if we had alcohol delivery in college?
Imagine waking up a little banged up Sunday morning as a Florida State undergrad or maybe a postgrad and dialing up couple Bloody Marys and chicken and waffles.
Dude, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, it could be quite the Sunday morning.
Who does that? Our sponsor does that. That's pretty sweet. And that's all the brands?
That is Centrale, Matzo, and Township.
I could definitely go like, you know, like
with Soto.
Centrale and Game of Thrones, you know? Mm-hmm. Like just dial it up on a Sunday night or, you know, maybe some Township while listening to the Nolcast. There we go. That's pretty sweet.
So, again, the app is For the Table, and you can take a better look at it at forthetableapp.com. As always, want to thank Matt and all of our friends at For the Table Restaurant Group for partnering with us. And just honest moment of real admiration as to what you're doing over there. Bud, a pretty significant development last night, has some recruiting implications. Lawrence Dawsey may be retained, but he won't be retained as the wide receiver coach. This is something that we've talked about at times, even angering some in the fan base. We've discussed this for, I think, the better part of 3 years. A move that probably needed to happen, and a move that ultimately... I don't know exactly how to say this, but I would have been blown away with Taggart's experience and knowledge of the situation had Dawsey actually been retained and maintained the position that he had on Jimbo Fisher's staff.
I mean, look, neither of us thought he was going to keep Lawrence Dawsey as a receivers coach. Why? Because he routinely crushes Dawsey recruiting Tampa. Dawsey's not a good recruiter. We've said this for how many years? There's no way. Willie Taggart's a Tampa specialist, right? From Bradenton, you know, or Palmetto down there. Coached at USF. Beat Dawsey for several Tampa kids, by the way, at Oregon after being there only a couple months. I want to be respectful about this. I don't think Lawrence is a bad receivers coach. I don't think he's like a great one or anything. He is a bad recruiter, 100%. And I say that with a lot of years of looking at this. Every person in that program, though, absolutely loves him. They say, man, you know, I've talked to him before, like other coaches on that staff. I'm like, man, you guys, you realize Dawsey's killing you here. Like, man, he's such a great mentor to these kids. You know, he's a great mm-hmm. father figure. A lot of them come, you know, from single parent homes. They talk about his personality and his character, right? And those are important things to have in a program. There's no doubt. And my response would always be, okay, but he's paid $472,000 to coach receivers, and you're not getting enough out of that spot. I mean, that's a hole on the staff. And number two, his receivers group do seem to get in trouble more than almost any other receivers group. But at the same time, he's also a mentor to other kids on that roster. And I do think he's a good person and genuinely cares about kids. There's word out there that he actually could stay.
Might be some creative accounting here. I like the words.
I love it.
I like how this might play out. Absolutely.
You want to keep him around the program, be a positive influence on kids, be a good mentor, somebody they can go to when they're having some trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, man.
And have a East Texas cult pay to do so? That'd be even better.
Oh, yeah. So check this out. Because of the way Jimbo's buyout was, if Florida State doesn't retain him as a coach, A&M's got to pay that money. So then maybe Florida State could hire him as a support staff member. That's not a bad little option. And then you got A&M paying most of his salary, and maybe you pay him like a Damian Craig-style salary during that year when A&M's paying him. You know, his son is on the team as a walk-on. And you know, maybe he wants to stay in Tallahassee for a year. Who knows? What I'm saying is I think there could be value in keeping Lawrence Dawsey with the program if he wants to be there. But you are absolutely getting a lot of value of not having him coach receivers and recruit Tampa for you anymore. That's an upgrade. Almost anybody else they bring in, I think, to be honest. And I'm not trying to be a jerk. I'm just saying two draft picks in 10 years is bad. Missing out on Tampa kids, letting Clemson beat you in Tampa repeatedly is bad. And now I think they're going to do a lot better in the Tampa area. A lot better. You want to talk about Wood Bay? Like, we really haven't talked about just the magnitude of that.
I do. I think that's fair. We mentioned it real briefly that, like, if you're not familiar with the story, and I'm sure at this point almost everybody is, but it's also a hell of a indictment on the previous staff. This was not, by the way, the first social media interaction that might have pointed to a kid having a real legitimate interest in Florida State. So... Yeah, we'll circle back to that later in the pod. As far as some criticisms of past regimes, it's remarkable. I mean, I compared it to like David Warren. That's 20 years ago, and that's in a whole different era of recruiting that involved like VHS tapes and a time that obviously the skeleton of the process is the same, but recruiting is a whole different world than what I could tie the best example that I had, and that is David Warren was, as a sophomore in Texas, and Tyler, Texas, was considered maybe the best player in the state of Texas, regardless of classification. He was, by most services, the number one defensive end in the country and was the USA Today Player of the Year on the defensive side of the ball. That guy reached out to Florida State, I think, before Thanksgiving to see if he could attend or if he could take like an official visit. And that's about the only comparable. I know a lot of people compare it to Ramsey's situation, and I'll let you talk about that. But honestly, I think the Warren is a better example, and that's the best thing that I can draw upon from my history of following Florida State recruiting as far as having a elite level kid reach out to you in the final weeks or days of his recruitment and being able to jump straight to the head of the line.
Man, absolutely. It's unheard of, man. It really is to be able to do that with a new coach. You know, like that's the other thing is Willie just got here. Now, I'm not saying he didn't recruit Woodbay at Oregon, certainly, but Oregon was really not in the running, and Florida State was. This is really, really impressive, man. I got to tell you, too, talking to people inside the program, they thought that Woodbay was just absolutely like a stud of a person, mm-hmm. man. Just, you know, looked people in the eye, shook their hands, you know, asked engaging questions that made sense, questions you could tell, hey, like this kid understands his future, both professionally and academically. You know, some kids come on official visits, they act very entitled, they have an attitude problem. You know, that wasn't him at all, man. And that I think was one of the reasons why our sources in the program were so encouraged by the official visit, because he was asking questions that are like questions that somebody would ask who is real serious about coming to school there. Right. And that's kind of one of the reasons, really couldn't discuss at the time, why we thought, okay, Florida State's got a real chance to pull this off. As crazy as it sounds, and I think we all kind of were like, wait, what? Are they really going to – they're going to pull a kid who's committed to Ohio State for over a year, who's a USC legacy in SoCal, and they're going to pull him to Tallahassee? Seriously? But they did. They absolutely did, man. I think it's just super impressive. He's going to be a guy who I think is going to be very valuable. You know, you got a lot of guys in now on FSU schedule playing the spread, right? Syracuse is a spread team. Clemson's a very spread team. Miami's moving that way. Florida State's that way, obviously, but you're not playing your own defense or your own offense. Florida is now moving to the spread. You need defenders who can play in space. You absolutely do. And that's something that you're going to have to do on a yearly basis. And I think Woodbay is a guy who's really good, can play in space, but can also play down in the box. I mean, he's a fairly thick build. That's a great get for them, man. I'm very excited about that. I don't know that he comes in and starts day one. In fact, I said on Twitter, I don't think he'll start day one. Mm-hmm. But I think he'll be a multi-year starter.
Yeah. Really great athlete. Love to get the ball in his hands regardless. I can see the people that value him as an offensive player as well. There's a great skill set there. Ultimately, I think his future's on the defensive side of the ball. That's not what I'm insinuating. But just a kid you want to get the ball in his hands, and it wouldn't shock me if he didn't have a future in some kind of special teams or something like that. So dynamic athlete, I think in time can be a really, really good defender and a real, real nice kind of pivot and change of direction for the class. And obviously Robert Cooper's the first kid that sends his LOI in. But by all means, this is the first real recruit of the Willie Taggart era.
You know, the number one recruit that Willie Taggart got, it's not Jaden. And I like Woodbay a ton.
It's the kid whose name just came out of my mouth.
It's Robert Cooper.
Yeah.
It's Robert Cooper, man. Like, that's an elite defensive tackle that Georgia and Bama wanted to flip.
We started the podcast with that 2 weeks ago or whatever. I don't think people at the time appreciated how big of a deal that was. And I think we went out of our way to state that that's a big damn deal. You had a couple SEC forces that were about to get involved there late. And that's, again, you don't want the circle to expand. That's a big time player. And it's a significant piece that they were able to hold on to.
You know, but you know who appreciates holding on to an elite level defensive tackle? A&M fans, because Jimbo just lost theirs. They're losing a kid from Texas. Bama's going to get him. Bobby Brown. He was probably the best kid in A&M's class. A national, you know, top 150 type kid, really good defensive lineman, and $75 million guaranteed, and can't keep him. That's disappointing.
Too easy to say this, but it's certainly his prerogative if he wants to open up his number of schools that he's looking at.
How big of a trade did Florida State make, man? to lose Jimbo Fisher at that point in his career and flip him out with a guy who's energized.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah. At that point in his career and at that point of his experience at Florida State. Yeah. Yeah, it was huge. It was huge. We'll revisit the Jimbo Fisher era for just a second here and in a little bit of the podcast.
Oh, should we talk about how Florida State wasn't recruiting Woodbay at all, despite the fact that he was a huge Jalen Ramsey and Derwin James fan?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I referenced that a second ago. Why don't we just go ahead and jump into it? I mean, the kid's posting all over the place that he's that models his game after Derwin. There's just a ton of social media out there that this was not like a, oh, wow, you're telling me that kid actually has an interest in Florida State? No. No, it was stated. It was out there, and it just, for whatever reason, fell on a big set of deaf-ass ears in Tallahassee.
That's amazing. That they didn't flip him an offer?
Right, yeah. No list. I mean, man, I will – so we'll we'll get into this. This narrative that, hey, maybe Jimbo Fisher stopped recruiting has picked up a lot in the past 6 or 7 days. I think we mentioned this. I think I mentioned this with some familiarity that I had with the Justin Fields recruitment maybe 2 months ago. I don't know, maybe not 2 months ago, but it was a while. I'll go back and try to find it. That if you're of the opinion that maybe Jimbo Fisher has stopped having his full interest towards Florida State, that you could look at the recruiting scene and find that. Yeah. I mean, it was turned off. The whole recruiting process was turned off 6, 8, 10 weeks ago, however long you want to go back and look. I mentioned on the podcast that it's my opinion that Jimbo Fisher coached 8 quarters of college football this year with his full intent of being the Florida State coach moving forward. The more that I look at that, I think the more accurate that is. I think you have to have an appreciation here, folks, that Willie Taggart took over an institution that had little to no contact with any of the kids that he's trying to get to sign a letter of intent to spend the next 3, 4, 5 years at that school. That Florida State hadn't been in touch with a lot of these kids in 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks. It was just a complete abdication of responsibility or even a caring as to what you would expect a professional to do and what you would expect a professional to do that's being paid as much money as Jimbo Fisher was.
And yet you couldn't 100% call them out for it in some ways, because it was like the understanding was that he was going to fire like basically his entire staff.
Right.
So maybe you didn't want those guys still recruiting for you, but it was weird, man. And we talked about it. It was
very weird. I mean, I remember on one pod, I'm just like, look, there's some things with the Justin Fields recruitment that I can't make sense of. I can't put the pieces together to figure out what the hell's going on or why this played out the way it did. That was certainly proven to be true in time. There was just a lot of information that out there that, honestly, it was just confusing, trying to make sense as to how are we not in touch with any of these kids? How did we leave the summer with 3 of the better players in the state of Georgia on the verge of committing, and yet we haven't followed up with any? Like, what's going on? Obviously, I think we have a pretty good idea as to what was going on, but that's not something in real time that you can exactly make sense of and then draw one line from point A to point B that you're – head coach is leaving and no longer cares really about what the future days of the program looks like, and certainly isn't concerned with what the roster composition is going to be.
I totally agree, man. I mean, it's – do you know what school has the highest average recruit ranking of the schools that have new coaches?
Oh, of the school that has new coaches? Mm-hmm. I'm going to guess that's Florida State.
It is. Yeah, good guess, man. So Florida's at a 90.26. And Florida State is at a 92.56. A&M's got 89.21, and Tennessee's got an 88. So, look, I tweeted this from the Tomahawk Nation account. I said, look, if you want Florida State to rocket up the recruiting rankings, like the total ones that account for class size, just take a bunch of 3-stars.
Right, right.
But does that actually help the roster? Does Florida State's roster get better if you take a bunch of scrubs who won't actually play and you're going to have to cut in 2-3 years? No. You're going to have to take some selective bodies, and I guess this is a transition to one of our next topics here. The early signing day killed these teams with new coaches, like, mm-hmm. across the board. The right move is not to load up on a bunch of guys who will never play. Willie Taggart has got to identify what positions absolutely need a body, and then he's got to go try to fill that with a talented body. And in some cases, he's going to be able to do that. And maybe a few cases, he won't be able to do that. But the important move is not the fill, it's the ID. You have got to figure out which positions you can get by without taking a marginal kid, and then go instead, take a bigger class next year and load up after you've had a full year on the recruiting trail. I think he gets that. And one of the reasons why I think he gets that, he said yesterday 16 to 18 kids. If he had said we want to take 21, 22, I think I would have been kind of worried, man. Because that's not realistic here. Florida State got hurt by this sort of signing day. So did everybody else, to be honest. And how they got hurt was essentially a lot of kids who Florida State probably would have gone in on down the stretch if they missed on some of their top kids are now not there, right? There's a lot of kids who, like these mid-level schools, these small schools, like Kansas and Minnesota, you know, Virginia Tech, not to put Kansas in the same conversation as Virginia Tech, but, you know, even like a Southern Miss or whomever, Missouri, those schools cleaned up by pressuring the kids and saying, hey, look, man, I know you're our best player, but we got to fill this spot. So either you're in or you're out. And the kids, almost to a man, signed. And I think a lot more signed than even the most optimistic people were expecting. And so, you know, I'm talking to my guy and I'm like, so play and see. And he's like, and this is a conversation I've had with a lot of these different coaches now in the last 24 hours. It's not just plan C. It's like plan D, plan E, plan F.
Right. Yeah. I think we talked about this 6 months ago or so during the summer when we had a chance to kind of project as to how this might play out. You're not going to be able to have the fallback options that you want, and you're not probably going to be able to call. I think a hypothetical I might have used is like if you're the University of Tennessee, you're not going to be able to call the kid that's committed to maybe Vanderbilt, best case scenario, but even say like maybe Middle Tennessee State the day of signing day when you had the two other tight ends that you were trying to recruit sign elsewhere. Like you're not going to have those emergency options available anymore because they're already going to have signed with their school. So I think you're very accurate to point out and accurate in the way that it played out that these fallback options, you're really going to have to change how you evaluate kids because you're not going to have maybe option C or D there anymore. It's they're going to be gone. They're going to be signed to whatever school it was that ultimately took such a commanding lead that they felt comfortable giving them their signature. And it's really a whole nother process as to how the final days of recruiting are going to play out.
Yeah, it really is, man. It's like, you know, for instance here, pull up like Virginia Tech's class, you know, or Minnesota's class. There are kids in those classes who I think other schools, other big schools would have liked to flip. Just I'll pull up Minnesota for an instance, right? Minnesota did a great job of taking some kids who other schools really wanted to wait. So how about Robert Cooper's teammate, Terrell Smith? He's a corner out of South Gwinnett. Look, is Terrell Smith an FSU option? Probably not, and definitely not in December. Would he be a better Power 5 school than Minnesota option down the stretch? Absolutely, but they got him to sign. You know, he's a three-star. I think the ratings this year kind of jacked up, to be honest. You know, number 714 in the nation, whatever. You know, getting Elijah Teague out of Chicago, another one for Minnesota. And there's a lot of examples of this with the smaller and mid-level schools. So now, you know, okay, like how about Rashad Bateman? They got him. He's a four-star, number 354 nationally out of Tift County. Where is Tift County?
Tift County's right off of 75 as you're driving from Atlanta to Tallahassee. Yeah, it's right. I believe Tift's just south of Macon.
Georgia liked him. Florida State liked him. South Carolina offered him late. A&M actually offered him on the 18th. And yet he didn't, like, think about that. Like, we know Jimbo liked him. Jimbo just offered him. You know, Georgia offered him late. I'm guessing it's like one of those, hey, wait till February things. But he ended up sticking with Minnesota, man. And that's a good example of this. A kid like a Bateman, a couple kids in like Vautech's class. There's a lot of different schools who wanted them to wait. And it's just not happening. So now their options are lesser, which means you got to go swing for the fences. And I think Florida State's got a staff that knows how to swing for the fences. And that's a big deal.
But I think we mentioned maybe a couple weeks ago that ultimately we expected Florida State's class to fall somewhere between 8 and 13, 8 and 14, somewhere in that area. I think ultimately that number is going to be pretty right if you really concern yourself with what like the overall class ranking looks like. You were never going to have a top five class. It was just the hill was too hard of a climb. But I think at the end of the day, you're probably going to be looking at somewhere you know, somewhere maybe 10th, 11th, 12th, somewhere in that area once you have your second kind of signing day here in February.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to downgrade mine slightly just because I don't know if there's enough kids left to go get. And I do applaud Willie for, you know, going out and saying, hey, like, we're not going to load up on kids who can't play here. 16 to 18 is a message of quality over quantity.
Yeah, and maybe I'm putting that number at more of an average star rather than the overall number.
Oh, average star. They're already top five average star rating.
Right. I think that may come down a little bit. But now if you're at 16 or 18, it may very well not. But I would just stress to people not to freak out with what you see as the overall number. I think the vast majority of our listeners wouldn't do that anyway. This is going to be...
I think they can get to that 10 to 17 range.
This is going to be a process. Absolutely. Just that
like the 7, 8, 9 spots are real hard to get to. I mean, if they end up 11th or 12th, I wouldn't be shocked. If they end up 16 or 17, it wouldn't shock me either. What I don't want to have happen.
Well, you know, after Georgia's driven through the Southeast and signed pretty much every kid of worth, it's just going to be a little bit of a challenge.
So can we talk about how Florida's kind of in trouble here?
We've talked about it before, man.
A little bit. Now, I think they made a good hire, man, but Georgia is going to win a national championship very soon.
Absolutely the case.
Like, if there's one team I want to buy futures in nationally, it's Georgia. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. They are just destroying it. They're kind of doing that Bama 2008 thing where the rest of the SEC looked around and said, hey, are y'all effing serious? Really? Like, we're going to allow this to happen? Like, this is going to go down with no repercussions? You remember that Bama 2008 class when they just got everybody somehow?
Everybody.
Yeah, everybody. And because they knew they had to make moves and get stuff done and be all in. And Georgia is now all in, for sure.
Fully committed, I believe, is the terminology we used two episodes ago. Yeah, they are fully committed institutionally.
You know who's got to play Georgia every year? Not Florida State. So now they do got to play Clemson, but I don't know that Clemson is quite as fully committed as Georgia is. In that way. Also, think about this, man. South Carolina is doing some things, not like in a, hey, going to beat Florida on the regular basis, but, you know, they got five.
If you like defensive players, you're going to like their class, especially come February. You're going to really like their class.
I mean, they got Israel Mukamu, which is a good example of how the rankings are screwed up this year, rated 638th in the nation. I know he's a lot better than that. Rescindo Lewis, they flipped from FSU. They got five four-star type players in that class. SEC East is not great still, obviously, but...
And Pruitt's going to... He'll recruit. He'll absolutely recruit.
Yeah, absolutely will recruit.
And Tennessee is always has a presence in Florida and just the general Southeast. All of these schools overlap each other. But yeah, what Georgia's doing is a problem for everybody in the SEC East. And it's probably has the most direct impact on the school located in Gainesville. I completely agree with you there.
And ultimately, Florida catching an extra loss every year, potentially, that helps FSU's recruiting.
Because they're
out of the national spotlight and potentially by Halloween every year. So, you know, if you look at the average star rating in the ACC, Florida State is 92.56. They trail only Clemson and only by a little bit, 92.81. The Tigers, 92.56 for FSU. FSU's average star rating is actually higher than Miami's. Now, it won't stay because Florida State's going to have to take some depth in this class and you know, add some bodies at a few spots. But it's still going to be a very talented class on average. And the main thing, like we've been saying, don't fill up the roster with kids who can't play here. And you're going to have to fill up the roster of coaches, by the way, man. That's another thing we got to probably discuss here after we talk about Dawsey. You know, looks like Dugans is probably the leading candidate Florida State wants to get. You know, there was a word yesterday that Willie Taggart was maybe down there talking to coaches, and we'll see if that comes to fruition. But that'd be a nice hire. You know, front guy from Tallahassee, good recruiter, seems to be a good coach down there. He's a Knoll, obviously. So we'll see if Willie Taggart is able to pull that off. But he said yesterday he wants to have his staff in place by the new year, and really. After early signing period, it's not like there's a huge rush to get a class in place within the next week, right? I mean, as long as you do it in the next 2 weeks, I think you're probably pretty good. Because then you're going to have an official visit starting like the 6th, I think, or maybe it's the next week with the 14th. It might be the 14th this year. I think so. just get your coaching staff in place in time for the next round of official visits.
Very doable and very much something that I think you'll see intact and in place, and Florida State will be ready to go. Obviously, we'll talk about hires as they come. The Dugan's name has been mentioned for a while and would not, at this point, I think that might be more likely than not. We'll see. Bud, anything else you want to talk about before maybe we mentioned a story that popped up yesterday?
Somebody asked us, do we think the signing of Jaden Woodbay will help with Brendan Radley-Hiles? Maybe. I still don't know that I would pick him to Florida State at this time. I still feel pretty good with my Oklahoma pick. Maybe. You know, here's something people have asked about. What about hiring Pat Surtain, senior, as a coach? Mm-hmm. Now, here's the rule. You can't hire high school coaches anymore to be like GAs or support staff guys if you're going to recruit players from their school. And Surtain's at American Heritage, which is a great school for recruiting, so you can't do that. But you can hire them if you put them as an on-field coach. And a lot of people are like, wait, you're going to take a high school coach and do that? At the same time, the guy did play in the NFL for like, 10 to 12 years, has coached the high school level for several years, seems to be a really good coach. American Heritage's DBs are always really, really well coached. His son is also the best cornerback in the country and probably the best corner to come out of South Florida since Patrick Peterson, who back in the day was known as Patrick Johnson. I haven't been told that's happening, but you know, from the emailer there, yeah, I think that would actually be a pretty good move. So interesting there for sure. I think he will get the hires done within the next 2 weeks.
All right, bud. So yesterday, a story came out from Reddit's college football sub-forum that Delaware State did not, and you can correct me if I don't have the details here correct, but basically Delaware State had not either offered or was not at a certain benchmark when it comes to the amount of scholarships that an institution has to extend to be in a place to where a victory over said institution could count towards towards the number of bowls needed to be bowl eligible. Is that more or less accurate?
Yeah, essentially, apparently you have to have 90% of scholarships given out, and Delaware State was at like 87% or something, which is basically one scholarship difference, you know, 90 to 87 of 63 scholarships, or like one and a half, because they can give half scholarships at the FCS level or quarter or partial. Mm-hmm. This is so stupid. So stupid. Like that, I looked at it.
I don't see how this is a real-time thing, but I don't see how this isn't like a lagging. Like, how can you be responsible for the institution? Like, if you want to tell me that they have to, over the past 3 years, have offered a certain percentage, but I don't see a way that you can, if you're doing the institution of that year, man, you schedule these games 2 or 3 years in advance. I don't see how this is possible, and I don't see how a said institution that scheduled a school is supposed to be responsible for the way in which they manage their roster 2 to 3 years down the line from when a game was put together. I realize I'm also preaching to the choir here as far as the perspective from the individual team.
I got this sent to me, right? And I said, okay, I'm working on an article about FSU's class size, which is actually relevant. Got a 2:30 tee time. I looked at it, said they were one scholarship off. It's very clear that they will either, if they applied for a waiver, they would get it, or this would just be waived away because it's, you know, essentially like insignificant. When you're talking about one scholarship, it's really not Florida State's fault that Delaware State didn't spend the $500,000 check or however much it was on scholarships. And as Ralph Russo of the AP reported, look, it's really, you know, Florida State just has to ask them, right, hey, are you guys – you know, at the right level, and they basically have to take their word for it. Now, I guess some teams might put this in contracts. I'm sure in future years it'll be in the contract. If it's not, I don't have access to that contract right now. I texted a buddy in compliance, not at Florida State, but another school, and I said, hey, would you even know to check for this? And he goes, like, we know it's a rule. He goes, I might have checked for it just because Delaware State's one of those really, really bad programs, but typically, no, it never comes up. So the rules in place, I think, to like prevent people from playing like Ivy League teams or, you know, University of San Diego or like you know, teams that are really more like D2 style.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just foolishness. And so I said, you know, we're not going to cover this nonsense because Florida State's playing in the bowl game. Does it matter if they had, you know, 64 or, you know, 58 scholarships or 59? No.
Only if you're in Blacksburg, Virginia, bud.
Right. Exactly. So this is just such a non-story to me, man. I just don't care. Like, and I really don't think FSU people did either. Like, this is kind of silly.
Kind of silly. Oh, are you going to tell me you're going to put an asterisk, a second asterisk on our bowl record? I'm not too concerned about it.
We're lucky this is a podcast and not a TV show because I'm doing a motion right now that just shows I really do not care that much.
Conveyed. Message conveyed, sir.
Yeah. Okay, so names-wise, coaches, some guys on the staff remaining. I guess we could just run this down real quick. Look, Lawrence Dossey, obviously we already talked about. Randy Sanders got the East Tennessee State job, head coaching job, so he's gone. Jay Graham, Tim Brewster have already left. We know Odell Higgins is staying. Rick Trickett's not going to be back. Brad Lawing, no, I absolutely don't think he's back either. In fact, I'm like sure on that. Charles Kelly, I can't see him coming back.
I think by the time this is published, you might have a firm indication as to where Charles Kelly's going, by the way.
Okay. Yeah. Look, they already have Raymond Woody. They already have Telly Lockett. We already told you he's going after Ron Dugans to get the receiver's job. Offensive line, I think it's either going to be Danny Hope or Greg Frey. Now, I'm not 100% certain on that. Somebody else could come out of the woodwork, but I think those are two names we've already covered before. Danny Hope was the guy at USF who had to leave due to a family medical issue. And then Greg Frey, who was at Michigan. Other guys on that Oregon staff who could still come. He already got Coach Pemp as well. So the staff is coming along. I guess we'll see. Could he get Michael Johnson from that staff? Potentially. But I'm not 100% certain on that. We'll have to see. And then as far as defensive coordinator names, there's a bunch of them out there. And I think at this point, like, there's no real rush to get one in place. Within the next 2 weeks, you can talk to a lot of different people. Do you want to go talk to T. Rob at South Carolina? Do you want to talk to, obviously I know people were floating Mel Tucker out there, but I don't think that was a real legit option just based on the people I was talking to. I think he's going to hire a good defensive coordinator. I do think the Leavitt thing threw everybody for a loop, that they would give him 1.7 whatever per year. Also, apparently keeping the Kansas State out clause in that.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see the Kansas State comments, by the way?
Yeah, I mean, that situation is not a great one for them at all, as far as how Snyder's leaving, and it's just not a great end to an otherwise pretty spectacular career, at least in my opinion.
I agree. I mean, he's trying to get his son the job. I feel like we've gone through this before.
Yeah, I think it probably touches the nerve of Florida State fans more than it would maybe another fan base.
Absolutely. So if that job opens up, Jim Leavitt's probably the guy for that job. By all accounts. So that's very interesting. And you wonder if Florida State would have let Jim Leavitt leave with no buyout for the Kansas State head coaching job, even if they were going to compete on money, which I don't think they were, as far as, $1.7 million a year for 4 years guaranteed. But that's just curious to me. I guess we'll have to watch Kansas State and see what happens. But I do think Willie Taggart's going to get a good defensive coordinator in there. He also made some good comments, by the way, in the press conference and to Jeff Cameron about how he plans to keep the offense very up-tempo and much like it looked at USF and Oregon. So it does seem like he's all in on, still running the ball with power, but from spread formation. So those wondering, will he go back to what he was trying to do at Western Kentucky initially? No, I don't think he will. I think he's going to stay spread out, stay with what got him the job.
All right, man. I think that's probably pretty good for this pod. Do want to mention one thing real briefly before we exit. And this is something you and I have been kind of emailing back and forth with each other for about 2-3 weeks and shared articles that we found about it. I don't know that it's at a place where we want to spend 5, 10, 15 minutes on it, but the tax bill that is kind of the talk of the day right now, not an area that we normally get into. We're pretty politically free of talk when it comes to this podcast, but there is a chance that this thing has a very real implication on college athletics, and we will look at it more in maybe the next couple of weeks. I've been talking to a lot of friends and people that I have with more familiar with some of the potential tax implications But basically, the gist of it is that you some donations may not be tax deductible anymore when you make a donation to a school's athletic arm or their booster arm, or maybe a write-off for PSL, or a lot of different ways in which this could kind of formulate itself. But it's got the potential to be a really big damn deal. And it's something that we'll follow, and it's something that we'll devote more time when we think that we really have our hands around what the ultimate implications could be. But this is something that could have a very real impact on college athletics.
Oh, absolutely, dude. It's something that I guarantee you a lot of athletic departments are watching very closely. It might be a huge deal, man. I mean, we might do a whole show on this later on. This is something that could be a really good off-season topic, too.
Just want to thank our sponsors one more time. I want to thank you, the listener. Bud and I spent a couple hours this morning kind of reviewing things. We've had an incredible recent run. We've had an incredible really 6, 7, 8 years, however long we've done this. So I want to always thank you just for your general listenership, the interaction that you have with our sponsors. The number of 5-star reviews we have is honestly humbling, and just want to thank that of which you, the listening audience, gives us and participates in the show. It's fantastic, something we're fortunate to be able to do, and look forward to doing many more of these to come.
This concludes this episode of the Nolecast. Make sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, write us at thenolecast@gmail.com, or tweet us at Nolecast. Man, we are almost to 1,500 5-star reviews. That is crazy, insane, beautiful. I mean, we asked for 1,000 like a month ago. We're almost halfway to 2. So, I mean, just love all the support. And it's just been a crazy, crazy past few weeks. I mean, record numbers we've been hitting. It's just really, really great. Just for the future schedule for the next few days, we got this one coming to you right now. We're looking at a bowl prediction podcast coming in around, I think, the morning of the 26th of December, and maybe one in between now and then. Yeah. Today's date is December 22nd, 2017, for Ingram Smith and Bud Elliott. This is your producer, Judson Wright, signing out.